You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Hello, and welcome to this podcast, the new BTKI Kids on the Block, Compelling Rationale for Non-Covalent Bruton Tyrosine Kinase Inhibition in B-Cell Cancers. I'm Deb Gordon, and I'm thrilled to be joined by Dr. Shazia Nakhoda, Assistant Professor of Malignant Hematology at Fox Chase Cancer Center, Temple Health in Philadelphia. In this podcast, she will be discussing the mechanism of action and role of non-covalent BTK inhibitors, as well as clinical trials in these agents in terms of their role in managing CLL, as well as clinical trial results in terms of their role in managing CLL and mantle cell lymphomas, and what it means for the future treatment of these patients. Welcome, Dr. Nakhoda.
Thanks again for having me here.
So the advent of the covalent BTK inhibitors dramatically transformed the treatment landscape of these B-cell malignancies. Yet it became clear that cancers generally become resistant to them. Can you briefly tell us why does this happen?
Sure, of course. So there's quite a few mechanisms of resistance that can develop to BTK inhibitors. In CLL, one of the most common mechanisms is development of a C481S mutation. And so this is a residue at the ATP binding site. And we know that in patients with ibrutinib and acalabrutinib, this is one of the most common mechanisms of resistance. We also see development of a PLC gamma 2 mutation. This is just downstream in the pathway of the BTK and is another very common mechanism of resistance. And the more novel BTK inhibitors, so zanubrutinib, for example, we see that there are other BTK binding site mutations that seem to confer resistance. And this seems to have some crossover with the non-covalent BTK inhibitors as well. And we can talk about that a little bit more as well. In other B-cell lymphomas, we don't typically see these same BTK binding site mutations. So the C481 or L528W mutations, they're not as common in mantle cell lymphoma, for example. So we hypothesize that resistance seems to be more related to upregulation of other pathways outside of the BTK pathway that lead to the B cell receptor downstream activation, which ultimately lead to lymphoma proliferation. And so targeting other pathways in the B-cell receptor pathways seem to overcome this resistance. We also, interestingly, can see that BTK inhibitors seem to have some effect extrinsic to the B-cells, specifically the microenvironment or the interaction between the B-cell and the supportive cells and chemokines. And so upregulation of these interactions may also lead to resistance to BTK inhibitors.
Now we have a whole new generation of BTK inhibitors, the non-covalent inhibitors. What makes them different? How's their mechanism of action different?
Yeah, so this is a very exciting development. So non-covalent BTK inhibitors reversibly bind to the ATP binding site of the kinase. And this binding seems to be agnostic of the C481S mutation. So patients who have or do not have this mutation can still respond at similar rates. And so why this is important? Well, we know that this is... So we know that the constant binding and rebinding of newly produced BTK proteins is important, and it may be that the covalent BTK inhibitors allow us to target this, whereas the covalent BTK inhibitors, they bind irreversibly, and so we're not as effectively targeting the new proteins that are being produced. We also have some unique pharmacokinetic data with these drugs. So perhaps the way that these agents bind in terms of half-life, the time that they bind to the BTK on and off seem to contribute to their efficacy as well.
So we have one non-covalent BTK inhibitor that's already been approved for the treatment of mantle cell lymphoma, pirtobrutinib, and Then we have the other one, nemtabrutinib, that is in late stage clinical trials. Let's talk first about the clinical trials themselves and what they're showing us about these agents.
Yeah, so well, pirtobrutinib is approved now for mantle cell lymphoma as a third line drug. And we have data from the Bruin study, which looked at pirtobrutinib in B-cell lymphomas. And we see that this agent is effective in patients with or without a C481S mutation. And as I mentioned, this is the most common resistance mechanism to the covalent BTK inhibitors. And this agent also seems to have a very favorable toxicity profile. So, the rate of treatment-related atrial fibrillation was zero, and very few patients had a grade 3 or 4 toxicity. The only major one greater than 1% was neutropenia, which was reported at 5%, which is very well tolerated. And so I think from a kind of cross-trial comparison, pirtobrutinib is considered a very well-tolerated agent. The other drug, nemtabrutinib, is not quite as far along, but is being studied currently in active clinical trials. And based on the phase 1 data, we do see a manageable toxicity profile. Just comparing these different BTK inhibitors, we know that nemtabrutinib is not as narrow in terms of the kinase specificity. So pirtobrutinib seems to be have less off-target effects as compared to the nemtabrutinib, though these two agents have been compared head-to-head, and that might be why we're seeing some differences in their toxicity profiles. But of course, how these drugs will function in the later phase studies is really important. We had a third drug, vecabrutinib, was actually pulled from the market due to a lack of efficacy. It was very promising in the preclinical data, but in the phase 1b study, there was a lack of efficacy. And so one thought is it has to do with the BTK binding time compared to pirto and nemtabrutinib. And that's one hypothesis, and there could be other reasons why the drug didn't seem to be as effective. But I think what these early phase studies and really even the preclinical studies are showing us are the pharmacokinetic data is really, really important when looking at these drugs. It's not simply, the kinase and on-target and off-target binding, but really how these drugs are binding that seems to be very important and may change how we treat other B-cell lymphomas as well.
Have you integrated pirtobrutinib yet in treatment of your mantle cell lymphoma patients?
Yes, I think it's a really great option for patients. So right now it's approved in the third line settings. So the way we treat mantle cell lymphoma right now, basically all patients are receiving a covalent BTK inhibitor either in the front line or second line setting. And often after relapse or resistance to a BTK inhibitor, we'll offer these patients CAR T therapy. The challenge is not everybody's eligible for CAR T, and I think pirtobrutinib is a very reasonable option. I treat a lot of older patients with B-cell lymphomas, and the logistics of getting CAR T is not always feasible for those patients. And so I think it's really exciting we now have a oral option with a very favorable toxicity profile. And I have been offering this to my patients as a great option. It'll be interesting to see, now that we have data from the Triangle study, which shows incorporating covalent BTK inhibitor to intensive chemotherapy in the upfront setting in medically fit patients. It'll be interesting to see how these patients do with long-term follow-up. It becomes a challenge when patients progress through pirtobrutinib and progress on CAR T therapy, because our options are really limited at that point.
There are some, so let's stick with pirtobrutinib for a minute. We're still waiting to see what happens with that drug in CLL. What do you see coming down the road?
Yeah, I'm really excited about this drug in CLL. So, we typically, when we're coming up with a treatment algorithm for patients, I'll offer them a BTK inhibitor or venetoclax and obinutuzumab, one of the two in the frontline setting. And if they relapse or are resistant, we'll switch over to the other one in the second line setting. But, you know, we're now seeing some data, really exciting data about combination therapies. And while combination therapy may not be the mainstay for all patients, it might be an option for certain higher risk patients, especially those who want, a MRD guided therapy. And so after patients have received a covalent BTK and a BCL2 inhibitor, venetoclax, those patients are very challenging to treat in the relapsed refractory setting. If you look at the data, you know, for lenalidomide, PI3 kinase inhibitors, even allogeneic stem cell transplant, those studies did not typically include patients who had received prior BTK inhibitor and venetoclax. So, you know, we see that in the real world setting, those patients really are not doing as well. And so pirtobrutinib is a very exciting option in those patients. And especially with CLL, the median age of diagnosis being 70, a lot of my patients aren't getting treatment until they're 80 years of age. And so the types of treatments I can offer them, really the focus becomes on tolerability.
Very briefly, because we're going to go more in depth on this in another podcast, but what else is out there in late stage clinical trials? What other non-covalent inhibitors are you excited about?
Yeah, you know, we have other drugs that are being investigated. So nemtabrutinib, of course, is pretty far along, and we'll see how this agent compares. You know, we have a combination FLT3 BTK inhibitor that's also being studied in B-cell lymphomas. And one kind of consideration is, you know, while we know that the off-target effects of the BTK inhibitors can be what contribute to toxicity, they may also be providing some effects on disease control at the same time. And so it will be interesting to see those other BTK inhibitors. As far as I know, those are the three that are currently being studied in terms of the non-covalent BTK inhibitors. There is a fourth drug that is being studied in autoimmune diseases, which they are not exploring currently in the B-cell lymphoma space. And with vecabrutinib now off the market, I think, as far as I know, that's basically it.
Great. Well, I want to thank you very much for speaking with us today. And I want to thank our listeners for joining us. We hope you listen to another episode from this series. This podcast was brought to you by MedLearning Group. MedLearning Group is accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education to provide CME for physicians. This CME activity was planned and produced in accordance with the ACCME Essentials. And I want to give a special thank you to our supporter, Lily, who provided an educational grant for this activity.